This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Michelle Norris.
And I'm Robert Siegel. The issue of gay marriage has at least two historical precedents in law, polygamy and miscegenation. Tomorrow we'll hear about how the law dealt with marriages of two people who were regarded as being of different races. Today we'll turn to the battles over marriages involving more than two people, specifically the marriage of one man and many women, polygamy. Polygamy became a contentious issue in 19th century America when Mormon leaders adopted the practice. Sarah Baringer Gordon is a historian of religion and a professor of law at the University of Pennsylvania. In 1852, as she says, after years of rumors and reports of Mormon polygamy, the church made a formal and public announcement. Its leaders believed in and practiced plural marriage.
The reaction in the rest of the country, first of all, was shock, and very quickly thereafter, outrage. And the outrage consisted primarily of two things, the first being that they thought that polygamy was analogous to slavery, in other words, a violation of the basic human rights of the women involved in the relationship. And second, they thought it was dangerous to democracy, that a society of polygamists would themselves become tyrants and would undermine the democracy in the rest of the country.
Yeah, there was a social theorist of the day who was ultimately cited in a Supreme Court ruling on the subject, talking about how this would lead to patriarchy and to dictatorship of various kinds.
Yes, that's the political scientist Francis Lieber, who argued that much like slavery, polygamy was naturally expansive, that it would spread outwards, and that because it was such a basic violation of the rights of women, that it would undermine both their citizenship and their capacity to participate in the broader society, and that their husbands would be like slaveholders, tyrannical abusers of their own families and themselves tyrants at the level of government as well.
Well, if the opposition to polygamy became harnessed to at least the sentiment, if not the movement, for the abolition of slavery, did the defense of polygamy become harnessed to the defense of slavery, at least under the banner of, say, states' rights or the protection of local custom?
It's a great question, and in many ways it did become harnessed to the defense of slavery, and especially the theory that individual jurisdictions, be they states or territories, had the right to determine for themselves what kind of domestic relations they would tolerate and encourage within their boundaries. And in the 19th century, domestic relations included not only husbands and wives, but also master and servant, and therefore slavery. So there was a natural alliance, if you will, between the two sorts of relationship.
In the end, of course, slavery was ended by constitutional amendment and by civil war as well, I suppose. But polygamy was ended ultimately. There was Supreme Court litigation over this.
There were about a dozen major polygamy cases, but the first one was called Reynolds against United States, and it involved, at least at the beginning, a test case. George Reynolds, who had two wives, agreed to be a defendant in a test case that was litigated all the way to the Supreme Court, and he lost. And the Supreme Court said that George Reynolds had the right to believe he should be a polygamist, but the moment he married a second wife, he had taken himself out of the realm of belief and into the realm of action and could be prosecuted as a criminal.
What happened when people put an end to a kind of marriage, and yet there had been a history of at least a couple of decades in which people had been engaged in plural marriages?
I guess the answer is that it was very expensive and very painful, not only for the people who had been involved in such marriages, but also for the federal government that sent well over 1,000 men to jail who were otherwise guilty of no violent crime and so on. It took a long time. It was very complex, and the law was enforced on a resistant population, creating all kinds of resentments not necessarily connected to plural marriage, but growing out of a systematic prosecution over really what is a 30-year period of people who were deeply committed as a religious matter to a particular kind of marriage and thought of that marriage as the most holy and sacred that could be lived on earth. I guess the difference would be that Utah, throughout the period of prosecution, was a territory, not a state. So that to the extent that the prosecution by the federal government against Utah was carried out, it was carried out within a jurisdiction in which the federal government had the full sweep of power.
So while one may have drawn analogies between practices in the Utah territory and the rights of states in the 19th century, Utah wasn't a state yet. In fact, some would say it wasn't going to become a state until it got rid of this practice.
Exactly.
What ultimately is different between a religious movement redefining marriage and saying that marriage could be between one man and more than one woman, rather than as it is in many parts of the world, between one man, one woman, and then all sorts of other illicit relationships on the side that aren't counted as marriage? What's the difference between saying that and rewriting marriage as it's being rewritten today in Massachusetts or San Francisco?
I think the main difference between Mormonism during the Utah territorial period and the debates today is that in 19th century Utah, leaders of the Church of Latter-day Saints argued that they had the right to create an entire separate legal system, so that although polygamy and plural marriage were the hot button issue and were the keys to the different social structure, the idea was that their society was different. Today, we're talking about expanding a familiar concept, monogamous marriage, to a group of people who have not been allowed to participate in it before. We've seen this happen, for example, in the case of the prohibition against interracial marriages, the expansion of the category of people who are allowed to be married to include those who are of different races was not a fundamentally different order of marriage, even though, as you say, in some places it was a difficult social pill to swallow.
Professor Gordon, thank you very much for talking with us today.
Thank you.
Professor Sarah Baringer Gordon, who teaches law and the history of religion at the University of Pennsylvania.